The Kaiser's blank check. If there's one thing that a person runs into when they study World War I is the term, over and over and over again, the blank check. This is a reference to the telegram received by Emperor Franz Joseph from Kaiser Wilhelm, giving some indication the kind of support that Germany would give Austria in their dealings with Serbia. Here in the United States, the term blank check has the meaning that a person had given you a check, they have signed it, but there isn't a dollar amount in it, so you can write it for whatever you want to. So in this sense, if you assume that this telegram is signed by the Kaiser saying we will support you in every way, then the Austrians feel pretty good that they can do pretty much what they want to without fear of having to do it all by themselves. Now, frequently when you read history books on World War I, they say the blank check. And sometimes they will take one part of the quote out of the textbook and or out of the text of the document and then go from that. So looking at the entire document is it's much more enlightening, because one of the things that you have, and I mean there's a lot of documentation from World War I that's still not available. Some of that stuff has been sealed for 100 years, and it's a good thing, because a lot of these people are going to have their biographies rewritten when all the information is out. But when you see the actual document, and frequently that is difficult to do, but that's not the case in World War I. I mean, we're getting ready to, you know, celebrate. I don't know how you, the celebrate was really not a correct term. We're getting ready to commemorate the 100th anniversary of World War I. I mean, it's we're almost in 2006. That just leaves us 8 years to go. But there's a place called the World War I Document Archive. You can go to Google and type that in, and you should find any number of portals for this wealth of information. Anyone who teaches World War I at any level should have this available to their students, or have their students do work out of it. It has every document of importance. I remember when it first came out that there were just a few. Now they have literally everything. Some of them, such as the famous Zimmermann note, is in its original code, so if you want to break the code yourself, you can. Excuse me. And it is spectacular. And in the classes, when I've taught a whole course on World War I, as we went through various topics, I would project those onto a screen, or sometimes I would pass them out, such as the Nicky and Villy telegrams. I would pass a copy of those out so everybody could look at them. And then we go through them and then say, okay, now your text says this and this person says that. How do you read the document? And you get a lot of, oh my God, that doesn't say what this intimates, okay? And so I thought it'd be good, since we're doing some little things on World War I, that it would be nice to do a little something on the blank check. Now, the document itself is only 19 lines long in three paragraphs. First paragraph, 4 lines, middle section, 11 lines, and the final paragraph, 4 lines. This was an answer to a telegram sent by Austria looking for some idea as to where Germany stood on the situation that has developed between Austria and Serbia as a result of, the excuse is the assassination of the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, but they've been looking for something to beat up on this pan-Slavic group. You know, they don't want the Slavs developing their own country, if you will. So it stated Berlin, July 6, 1914, confidential, for Your Excellency's personal information and guidance. It's from Bethmann Hollweg, which is the foreign minister of Kaiser Wilhelm. The foreign ministers at the beginning of World War I, both the Austrians and the Germans, are not exactly they don't exactly tell everything straight to the leaders. You'll find if you look through documentation and you look through accounts of the kind of advice that the emperors and kings were given, whether it's Kaiser Wilhelm, whether it's Emperor Franz Joseph or Tsar Nicholas, or even the King George. A lot of that information is being manipulated so that the bureaucrats can kind of move their leader to the area that they want them, which isn't a good thing. Okay, in the first paragraph, that is really nothing more than acknowledgement. It says, the Austria-Hungarian ambassador yesterday delivered to the emperor, which is Kaiser Wilhelm, a confidential letter from Emperor Franz Joseph, which depicts the present situation from the Austria-Hungarian point of view and describes the measures which Vienna has in view, and a copy is now being forwarded to Your Excellency. So they're acknowledging that they have received this document, what is in it, and looking it over. Then you get to the big 11-line section. I replied, Bethmann Hollweg, to Count Szigeny, today on behalf of His Majesty, that His Majesty sends his thanks to the Emperor Francis Joseph, all this formality of these letters kill me, for this letter, and would soon answer it personally. In the meantime, His Majesty desires to say that he is not blind to the danger which threatens Austria-Hungary, and thus the Triple Alliance, which is the alliance of Germany, Austria-Hungary, Bulgaria, and then later Turkey. As a result of the Russian and Serbian Pan-Slavic agitation, of course, the Russians are Slavs, and the tendency is that the Slavs in what is now Yugoslavia and the various places, Big Brother Russia is usually their protector, because Russia likes to use that as an excuse to try and take over the outlet from the Black Sea. They'd love to have Constantinople in that area of Turkey so they can move their ships freely in and out. Even though His Majesty is known to feel no unqualified confidence in Bulgaria and her ruler, and naturally inclines more to ward our old ally Romania and her Hohenzollern prince, yet he quite understands that Emperor Francis Joseph, in the view of the attitude of Romania and the danger of a new Balkan alliance aimed directly at the Danube monarchy, is anxious to bring about an understanding between Bulgaria and the Triple Alliance. His Majesty will furthermore make an effort at Bucharest, according to the wishes of the Emperor Francis Joseph, to influence King Karl to the fulfillment of the duties of his alliance, to the renunciation of Serbia, and the suppression of Romanian agitations directed against Austria-Hungary. Okay, so what you have here is the Austrians are concerned about this ally of Germany and Austria and Turkey's, which is Bulgaria. And they're concerned that they're going to sympathize with the Serbs, and that that Romania is going to get involved. And what we have here is an assurance that they believe that the King Karl will stay the line, which he does, okay? And he will help to thwart the others. So we've gone through the majority of this. You haven't heard anything? It's a blank check, have you? Okay, last paragraph. Finally, as concerns Serbia, His Majesty, of course, cannot interfere in the dispute now going on between Austria-Hungary and that country, as it is a matter not within his competence. The Emperor Francis Joseph may, however, rest assured that His Majesty will faithfully stand by Austria-Hungary, as is required by the obligation of his alliance and his ancient friendship, Bethmann Hollweg. Now, if you take the part, rest assured that His Majesty will faithfully stand by Austria-Hungary, cut all the rest of it out, you could probably say, well, it sounds like I can do whatever I want to. But the last part of the last sentence, as is required by the obligations of his alliance and his ancient friendship. Okay, this alliance that they're referring to is the Triple Alliance. Remember, Europe is divided into, in two camps. So we usually have the Triple Entente and then the Triple Alliance. Under the rules of that, see, most people assume that alliances in World War I were designed like the alliances that we presently have. NATO, okay? Anyone is attacked in NATO, everybody has to come to their aid. It doesn't make any difference if it's a little country or a big country. The reason you have NATO troops in Afghanistan is because of the attack on 9/11 on the World Trade Center. It's an attack on the United States by a group of terrorists. Therefore, NATO has to assist us dealing with those terrorists. It doesn't have to be China. It doesn't have to be Russia. It doesn't have to be anybody. I mean, it can be anybody. But the alliances at this time are not structured that way because they want wiggle room so that smaller countries can be absorbed into bigger countries. So the requirement of Germany, for example, coming to the aid of Austria-Hungary means that she has to be attacked by two or more countries, and one of them has to be a major power. So if Austria-Hungary is fighting Serbia and Romania comes in, that really doesn't trigger it, or Bosnia or some other little section, then technically speaking, Germany does not have to come to their aid. They should be able to handle that on their own. However, if Serbia is attacking the Austria-Hungarians and Russia comes in, becomes involved, then Germany becomes a piece of it, which, of course, that's what is going to happen. Had the Russians been able to have stayed out, Germany would have stayed out. So it's not quite the document that we would have believed. Now, remember, something you always have to stick in the back of your mind. This is 1914, and Emperor Franz Joseph is 84 years old. He has been on the throne of Austria-Hungary since 1848. Their army hasn't won a war since the Napoleonic Wars, and they haven't fought one since 1866. And it's a mess. And without a doubt, his mental faculties are not doing very well. And there's actually a play, I believe it's called 1916, which is kind of done from the Franz Joseph perspective, how he is manipulated by his advisors into doing different things. Something we'll talk about a little bit later on when you talk about these early telegrams and things. You know, they sent an ultimatum to Serbia, basically saying, you know, do these 10 things or we're going to attack you. And they made them in such a manner that it would be impossible for the Serbs to accept any of them. Well, they accept all but a part of one. But that information was never given to Francis Joseph. It was as if they turned the whole thing down. So there's a lot of subterfuge that is going on in these various areas. But that's what this blank check is. The outbreak of World War I is, as I've mentioned before, is a cascading effect. You know, you shoot the Archduke, but that's really not the main cause. That's the excuse to try to do some other things. And then that causes a problem, which leads to another problem, which accelerates a problem, and then boom, everything blows up. So we'll see that as we go through. So I hope you enjoyed that. I realize it's a little snippet. As I've mentioned in a previous podcast, that I'm going to attempt to do some video podcasting with my World War I unit and probably my medieval feudalism weapons unit. To see how they work. If it works, then it'd be quite extensive. But I want to do some little podcasts because obviously, you know, I do a video podcast of this. It wouldn't be that big of a deal. But a video podcast that would include this is I have a presentation where after we shoot the Archduke, I go through the steps that lead to the attack. And so we could see some other things and some photographs and all sorts of different sets of materials. Now, as far as the books on this, as I mentioned, the World War I Document Archive. And if you've never been there, go there. It's not just documents. They have pictures. They have journal. They have diaries. They have all kinds of other stuff. If you're into the air war, there's a site called the Aerodrome, which has everything you could possibly ask for from that time period. Origins of World War I by Parkinson, and The Archduke and the Assassins by Cassells. Don't forget to come by summahistorica.com. Pick up a CD. Leave a comment. I really enjoy your comments. I appreciate one thing about doing a podcast in the United States that's bounced all the way around the world is sometimes we're separated by various languages. Every once in a while, somebody sends me a nice note giving me a little more native pronunciation. So I really appreciate that. Someone sent in in my Conquest of Mexico one, I'd been pronouncing Bernal Diaz's name incorrectly, and the next time I do a podcast on that, I will correct that. So thank you very much, and have a nice day.